It is Friday, October 12, 2012, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. KUAF is supported by Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, celebrating the American spirit by uniting the power of art with the beauty of nature. The museum opens at 11 a.m. daily, except Tuesdays. More information available online at crystalbridges.org. Ahead on Ozarks, the TED Talks land in Bentonville. The franchised exercise in ideas made its Northwest Arkansas debut with TEDx Bentonville yesterday. Plus, the Fayetteville Farmers Market gets ready for its national coming out party and more. First, the Springdale School District may soon have some extra support in its efforts to modernize the district's approach to preparing students for college work, as the district has applied for federal Race to the Top grant funding. Based on population, the district could receive between $20 and $30 million in grant funding based on the district's population. Associate Superintendent Marcia Jones says a majority of the money will go toward enhancing technology for students in the district.
One, we want to get a one-to-one computer ratio for the students so that every classroom has carts of iPads or netbooks available to students. In addition, we want some available for checkout through our media system.
In addition, Jones says the money will go toward connecting and expanding independent information networks within the district to allow easier access to parents, students, and teachers. But increasing and expanding technology connectivity is only one part of the district's plans for the potential grant money. Jones says the district is also looking at expanding family literacy, after-school, and academy programs already in place, but that's not all.
We are looking at supporting a lot of curriculum writing work. Right now, with the shift into Common Core, a lot of work is being placed on our teachers that we'd like to support better with some additional staff to help us just do the work of writing curriculum. We are also wanting to bring in experts to help us with some of this curriculum writing.
The money could also go toward implementing more of a personalized learning plan for students, which Jones says would involve making improvements to the district's Career Action Plan program, which is currently how students in many schools plan their course schedules each academic year. Arkansans disposed of a record amount of unwanted or expired medications on National Drug Take-Back Day this month. According to a news release from Arkansas Attorney General Dustin McDaniel, participants across the state disposed of 12,042 pounds of pills. It was the fifth annual take-back event held in Arkansas. Free trees and shrubs will be given away tomorrow to Fayetteville residents. The 14th annual such giveaway will be at the Fayetteville Town Center Plaza. Fayetteville residents must provide proof of residency in the city and are limited to one tree or shrub. Tree varieties available this year include black oak, Kentucky coffee tree, and white flowering dogwood. The city of Fayetteville dedicated a new park this week. City officials dedicated St. Joseph Park on East Lafayette Street. City Park Development Superintendent Allison Jumper says that the park offers amenities like you would see in many neighborhood parks.
There are two benches, one in kind of the lower grass park area, and there's one up on street level. And then there's a series of three terraced seat walls, and it creates sort of an amphitheater-style setting for the neighbors to do Shakespeare in the Park type, you know, informal plays or gathering.
The park was made possible through the support of residents of the Washington Willow neighborhood and other residents in the area. And although jack-o'-lanterns have yet to be lit and turkey-induced comas are still in the future, holiday lights are already being strung up on the downtown Fayetteville Square. City Parks Maintenance Supervisor Joshua Bowen says crews began running electrical cable in the first week of the month, and that process of running the strands of lights began this week.
It takes us about 2 months, actually, to install a little over a quarter million lights, and it's about 3,000 man hours to get everything put in. You know, like I said, it takes a week just to put up miles of electrical wiring just to get ready for the lights.
Although the lights may twinkle brightly from November 17th through New Year's Eve, maintenance crews no longer have the task of going through each strand looking for burnt-out bulbs. Partly cloudy tonight, lows in the mid-60s, 20% chance of rain. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, highs will be in the upper 70s to lower 80s across the region tomorrow afternoon. 30% chance of rain tomorrow in northwest Arkansas, 20% chance of showers for the Arkansas River Valley. And tomorrow night, partly cloudy, 80% chance of rain and a low in the upper 50s in northwest Arkansas. The Saturday night for the Fort Smith region, partly cloudy, lows in the upper 60s, 70% chance of rain. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me on the phone from Fort Smith is Michael Tilley. He is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com. Michael, welcome back to the program.
Well, thanks. Thanks for continuing to invite me back.
Well, I couldn't help but invite you back this weekend because there are motorcycles, pistols, money, and all sorts of things to talk about.
Sounds like a Friday night on HBO.
It does. Well, let's start with J.B. Hunt. New economic news from them, and it's been a pretty good year.
Right. You know, J.B. Hunt continues to just – you wouldn't know that the U.S. economy was struggling right now if you just looked at J.B. Hunt's numbers. And that's a credit to, you know, long ago, Mr. Hunt decided to diversify and to not just be a trucking company you know, to say that they're a trucking company, well, they're not a trucking company. They are truly a transportation company. Their biggest segment, their intermodal segment, continued to score well. The revenue there was $794 million, which is up 15% for the year, and the operating income in that segment was just short of $100 million, which is up 25%. So they continue to push through. The only negative, if there was a negative, is that the analysts who follow J.B. Hunt expected per share earnings of 66 cents. J.B. Hunt hit it at 65 cents. That'll probably have a little bit of negative pressure on their overall share price, but I don't think it'll last long. But again, just a little trucking company that's no longer a little trucking company. And for the first 9 months of the year, they brought in revenue of a little over $3.7 billion. Which was well ahead of the $3.3 billion they had for the same period in 2011. So if you're betting on J.B. Hunt so far, your bets are paying off.
We're not talking billions when it comes to tourism tax revenues in Fort Smith and Van Buren, but we're talking an increase.
Right. You know, it's the one, as we talked about earlier, it's the one ray of sunshine, or one of the few rays of sunshine, I should say, in the Fort Smith area, are the sales tax collections here. Van Buren collections year-to-date are up almost 6.5%, and the Fort Smith collections year to date are up almost 6%. And the only downward pressure there is that the employment has remained fairly flat in the tourism industry, business and tourism travel industry in the area. And one of the things we hear from, for example, Merrill Keith, the executive director of the Van Buren Advertising Promotion Commission, is just these. They continue to get lucky with some of these big events that roll through. They had the Babe Ruth World Series in August. There was the Jehovah's Witness Convention over in Fort Smith, which there were 10...
Thousands.
Yeah, 10,000, 15,000, and, you know, there was overflow over into Van Buren hotels. So it's, taxes are the hospitality tax collections are up, which shows, and in Van Buren, that's restaurant and hotel, and Fort Smith, it's just hotel, but... At least for the Fort Smith region, which is between Whirlpool and other manufacturers pulling out, this continues to be, as I said earlier, a ray of sunshine.
Last week, about the time you and I were talking, there was an encouragement to the city of Fort Smith and tourism officials there to try to capitalize on motorcycle tourism.
Yes, it's a push. Department of Parks and Tourism is pushing this all over the state, and you know, they're trying to get You know, I think there were a few people a few weekends ago up in Northwest Arkansas for something called the Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue.
But yeah, a few, yes.
But you know, they're trying to. The state of Arkansas is that they trying to maximize that interest, and they're going around to Grady Spahn. It's going around to as many chambers as possible and talking about recruiting these folks and how much money they drop. And you know, these aren't the Sons of Anarchy type motorcycle folks you see on the HBO show. These are typically professionals, especially on the weekend guys, professionals who come in and have a lot of disposable income to drop. I think his report was that on the Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue, it was a 2005 study, but so it was $87.50 a person they dropped per day. Imagine how much that is now, 7 years later.
It was, I guess, the middle of the week when Arkansas Best Corporation and the Teamsters agreed to begin to talk, which is a big deal in this ongoing story.
Yes, it's their contract The 3-year contract expires. Excuse me, a 5-year contract, I believe, expires next March, and so you know they have to work through the Teamsters, which represent about 7,800 of the 10,000 people employed by Arkansas Best. And this is going to be very interesting, Kyle. You know, the Teamsters and Arkansas Best have not gotten along, to say the least. Arkansas Best has tried to sue them twice, a $750 million lawsuit, alleging that the Teamsters and YRC, which is a competitor to Arkansas Best, have broken violated terms of a national master freight agreement by giving YRC better wage deals. So Arkansas Best is under a lot of pressure to improve its financial position. It continues to lose money. I mean, it's not losing as much money as it has in the past few years, but stock is at 52-week lows and trending lower. So the company, the management there, has a lot of pressure to work out a better wage deal and improve their financial situation. And, you know, the Teamsters, they've played tough. We'll probably get very pleasant press releases, but I'd love to be a fly on the wall at the negotiations.
And finally, I don't know what to make of this, but apparently during presidential election years, gun sales, especially pistol sales, go up, and it's the same again this year.
Yes, I just think it's the obvious politics of people that are concerned that a change in administration will infringe upon their gun rights, so people buy up, and we're seeing that again. We're seeing it all over. We have gun shop owners in both Northwest Arkansas and Fort Smith saying that they easily see double-digit increases in their sales, and we see this report around the country too. I think Ruger, which is a large manufacturer, their first half sales in 2012 were up almost 50% over last year. So that's huge. But it is, you're right, Kyle, it is tied to politics. Obviously, I think there are a lot of folks, especially in the South and Arkansas, it's no secret that President Obama he does not poll well. He's not liked in Arkansas, and there are a lot of folks who don't trust what he may do to gun rights.
And finally, early voting begins on Monday, and much of this weekend's City Wire television program is devoted to politics. You can see that at 8 o'clock Saturday on KXNW and 6 Sunday morning on KFSM.
Right. Yes, thanks for the push. And in a few weeks, City Wire is going to push up to 7 a.m., so it's a good move.
Oh, on Sunday.
Yes, on Sunday, yes, sir.
Yeah, I like 7 on Sunday better than 6.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
All right, Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com. Michael, thank you.
Hello, this is Robert Ginsburg, your host for Shades of Jazz, Friday nights from 10 till midnight. On this week's program, I'll feature music from Red Holloway, Hope Morgan, Ray Charles, and a birthday tip of the hat to Thelonious Monk. This and much more, Friday night at 10 p.m. on Shades of Jazz.
This is Ozarks at Large. Yesterday, Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville unveiled two new exhibits in a space that once held the Wonder World exhibit. Elizabeth Wyman, registrar at the museum, was the guide for the first new exhibit, Moshe Safdie, The Path to Crystal Bridges. It explores the work of world-renowned architect Moshe Safdie, showcasing the progression of both the architect and his architecture.
So we start off with this model where he was exploring an idea, we go to a drawing, and we go to a larger scale architectural model. Moshe Safdie is one of the few architects who still works with large scale architectural models. He has a model shop in his studio in Boston, and from there we progress to a photograph of the final modular facility. This was featured in the 1967 World's Fair, and really was kind of an early culmination for a young career that really launched him from there on.
Moshe Safdie is, of course, the architect of Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. The building's sprawling windows, both large and small, emphasize Safdie's thoughts of light and its importance in art. Aaron Jones, guide program manager at Crystal Bridges, gave a tour of the second new exhibit yesterday. It's titled See the Light, the Luminous Tradition in American Art. It includes a major acquisition for the museum, and it shows how luminous artists use the concept of light.
So light has forever been a sort of a metaphor to communicate certain truths. You can think about religious kind of doctrine. And then during the 19th century, there was sort of a shift with transcendentalism, this concept of meditative in nature to seek higher truths.
Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda attended the unveiling tour yesterday. After the tour, she had some questions for Aaron Jones.
So this space has been several different things within the last year. So how do you have to approach it differently when you decide that you're going to have two exhibitions in this one space?
Absolutely. The curators are responsible for all of this, and so they look at not only the objects and the atmosphere of what this space actually truly is, because you see we have some compound piers, we have a unique kind of structure, but certainly for this particular exhibition, because so many objects emit light, they were going to have to put up some temporary walls. Here the James Turrell has its own room. That's not originally part of it. So the curators do have to look at what are these objects that we're getting with each one of these exhibitions, and how do we really set those off for the public and our guests to see them in context. If you happen to have been here at the very opening, we had Wonder World part of our permanent collection. We kept the space fairly much of how it was, and we had the backgrounds white. And then when we had the wonderful Hudson River School, you noticed that the walls were very, very dark, more contextual of how they would have been presented at that particular time. And I think it really allowed those colors that those painters were using to set the stage to look closely. And here, now you'll notice, not only have we gone back to the white walls, but we've kind of compartmentalized so that you can see these things in context, and now the lighting from the top. You don't have the house lights up to make it a darker space to really, really enjoy these objects.
Lighting plays an important part in art in many different forms, so why the decision to focus specifically on light in this exhibition, or these two exhibitions?
I think the public interest in not only some of the contemporary works of art that we have, such as the Dan Flavin, as well as our Sky Space by James Turrell. Many of them were wanting to know more. And then we also have this extraordinary architectural structure that so many people want to find out more about the architect, and they find another little space, and ooh, did you notice that light actually filters in and it looks different at a different time of day? Yes, we did, and that's what the architect knew as well, to kind of really share that. So the curators had the opportunity to kind of say, how can we continue this? We are still in our inaugural year. We are coming up on our first anniversary, so to be able to continue this idea of sharing our first year about the building and works that we have, complementing with some things that we can have on loan.
Now, the Mark Rothko at the other end of where we're standing right now has a unique kind of black curtain frame around it. Will that stay up, or is that a special way that you're having it framed right now to kind of debut it?
That was all for you guys. Isn't that great? It is kind of the debut. The beautiful curtain kind of puts it in a little architectural space of what makes it look kind of separate. I kind of like it, but it was traditionally as kind of an unveil, and it will not be there for the public opening.
It was a nice dramatic thing, so I was just curious if it was going to stay there.
I think one of our curators had said, you know, I kind of like it now. It looks kind of nice. So who knows? They may change their mind, but as of right now, it was specifically for the opening for you all.
Well, you did mention that much of this exhibition hinged on the acquisition of the Rothko. Can you kind of tell me what it means to have a Rothko and kind of what he means to the art world?
Mark Rothko is a pivotal individual in the history of American art. We have an early Rothko when he was experimenting with myth-making. And so I am in the education field. And so it is a wonderful opportunity for us in education to now have two Rothkos from as early to now what he was known. This is his most mature. This is what museums really want to find, that particular year, that particular color, and that style of Rothko. So this now is just a gem for our collection, and I think it's going to look really, really well in our contemporary collection soon after we have the light exhibition.
Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda talked to Aaron Jones of Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art yesterday at the museum as two new exhibits were unveiled. At almost the exact same time, just about 2 miles away, the TED Talks came to Northwest Arkansas. TED, a nonprofit based in New York, began as a one-time conference nearly 30 years ago and became an annual national, then international event in 1990. Speakers have 18 minutes to present, as the TED description suggests, ideas worth spreading. Past TED speakers have included Bill Clinton, Bill Gates, jazz artist Esperanza Spalding, and more than 1,000 others. Since the formation of TED, there have been TED Awards, the creation of the TED website, the TED Radio Hour, heard on KUAF and other public radio stations, and the franchised TEDx events, localized versions of the bigger annual gatherings. For more than a year and a half, a volunteer committee has worked toward bringing TEDx to Bentonville.
We just sat in a room and said, what do we want to achieve with this? Well, we knew we wanted to bring TEDx here.
Jennifer Sheely is a co-organizer of TEDx Bentonville and the holder of the TED license.
But we also wanted to bring people together and get conversations starting. And hopefully people in the audience would take away something that would cause them to do something differently in their lives. And I'm already, in talking to folks here at the break, I think that's already happening, which is amazing because we haven't even reached the climax of the program at all. So it's very exciting.
Each TEDx event adopts a theme. The Bentonville one embraced the thesis, Becoming, since the city and region continue to grow and change. The live speakers, all local, use their parcels of time to expound on business, cuisine, arts, and, in the case of Neeru Raghavan, how a life in business and marketing helped her when she became the president of the Hindu Association of Northwest Arkansas.
There were so many different stories we could have told, but ultimately I wanted to tell a personal one about how I had to really think through what I could bring to the construction of the temple and my past experience and my past skills and whether they could be of value to the temple. And that's what I ended up focusing on.
Neeru's talk, like all of the ones delivered yesterday, is the property of the TED organization, and we can't give you excerpts here. She used her time to explain how lessons she learned in business helped her guide the opening of the first Hindu temple in Arkansas. Her takeaway, and it's not exactly fair to summarize her presentation here in a simple sentence, is don't approach new roles in your life by focusing on what you can't do, but rather what you can bring to a project, and let other talented people fill in the gaps. A big part of the idea behind TED, either at the annual national event or online or at an event like TEDx Bentonville, is to have speakers and attendees talk to each other at lunch or during breaks to serve as an inspiration for each other, and hopefully the greater community benefits. Again, co-organizer Jennifer Sheely.
If each person walks away from here doing one small thing differently, well, hopefully it's like the pay it forward concept. They go home, they go to work, they tell people about it. Maybe that idea gets into the minds of others around them, and you have this movement started that filters out like ripples, you know, in a pond. And so, yes, I do believe that a year from now, a couple years from now, this will still be out there.
In addition to the local speakers, five of some of the best recent TED presentations from across the country were shown on a screen during the day. If this TEDx event came and went without you knowing about it, that's understandable. To be given the TED title for an event, the license, organizers must agree to several stipulations, including a cap of 100 invitees for the first TED event in any city. Brian Phillips is one of the co-organizers responsible for TEDx Bentonville.
They're very specific about protecting their brand image, as they should. It's a very valuable brand. And so they want to limit first-time events to 100 guests only. They want to restrain your ambition a little bit. They know that you're going to want to put on a great show and make it as big as possible, but they want to give you a little bit of guidelines on how to keep it sort of small and not bite off more than you can chew.
There was just enough to chew on during an afternoon break.
All right. There you go, sir. You want to try a fake steak?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Good.
Chef G.W. Chu handed out his food, including a recipe he calls fake steak, made from beans, right after his passionate discussion of eating healthier. He urged everyone to be an herbivore for just one day each week. Some of the speakers yesterday have spent a career talking to Fortune 500 companies. Others were in front of a group for one of the first times in their lives. Two of the speakers yesterday, Al Lopez, better known as musician and community activist Papa Rap, and Zeke Taylor, a highly respected artist from Eureka Springs, compared notes during a break. You'll hear Zeke Taylor first.
This is all brand new to me. I don't do public speaking at all. So with me, it was writing a script and rehearsing in front of a mirror over and over, just so I could hopefully embed it in my brain. And once I got on the stage, it came pretty easily, easier than I expected it to. So, but that was my preparation, just repetition.
Yeah, but I'm messed up right now in my mind because I've been hearing all these speeches, and really, I've done this before, and I talk about diversity and cultural awareness. But after hearing all these artists, I said, I need to talk about the music. I need to talk about the art. I need to talk about, you know, how to bring all this together, what I've been doing. So now I'm about to get up there, and I say, I'm confused. I brought a drum just in case so that we can play a little bit of conga drum there. But it's been a wonderful experience just to listen, you know, to all our speakers and all the possibilities and opportunities. And my mind is just growing, you know, in the way of, can't wait to get on the Spanish radio and share.
Niru Raghavan, one of the speakers, says she thinks the conversations that took place yesterday will have an impact to some degree on what happens in Northwest Arkansas over the next few years.
As an attendee, I think I've learned from the other speakers how important it is to be the spark and be the unique person out there who's not afraid to do something crazy. And people may or may not follow your lead, but it's very important for everyone to be the spark on the chance that you may provide a path for someone else to follow.
The first ever TEDx Bentonville was yesterday. The first ever TEDx Fayetteville, organized by a completely different set of local volunteers, is scheduled for March. It is Friday, October 12th, 2012. I'm Kyle Kelms. With me is Becca Martin Brown. She is the features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And we've lost Antoinette.
She has headed down south and west to the Harvest Festival.
East. South and east.
South and east.
To the Harvest Festival.
No one has ever claimed that I know my directions very well.
Well, I've been driving Highway 16 for a very long time.
Yes.
So. And speaking of which, we're going to talk about unusual things going on this weekend, and that's one of them.
Harvest Festival.
Because who would think that in the middle of nowhere, Arkansas, somewhere between Brashears and Ozark, there'd be a festival with 8,000 or 10,000 people there.
Well, that's happening even as you and I sit here.
It is. Originally called the Mulberry Mountain Harvest Festival, it's now the Yonder Mountain String Band's Harvest Festival.
They serve as the host band.
And they will perform, of course, along with artists like the Punch Brothers, Leftover Salmon, Sam Bush, and more. 75 acts, North Mississippi All-Stars, Mickey Hart Band, Delta Ray, and the Gourds, into the wee hours of Sunday morning.
Yes.
Passes range from $80 to $400.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be that much of a VIP. And you can find out more at yonderharvestfestival.com or follow Kevin Kinder, the WhatsApp music writer, who is down there covering it all on his blog at nwatunedin.com.
If the sun comes out and stays out Saturday morning, I'm going to go down and experience it for a day.
Cool.
Okay.
Have fun.
I will.
Other interesting things going on this weekend. Something called October Shadows. A paranormal lamplight tour. I'm so in. 7 and 8 o'clock today. It'll happen a few more times this month at the Clayton House in Fort Smith.
What is a lamplight tour?
I don't know.
Okay.
But I intend to find out.
Okay.
I know it's $7, and you should call 783-3000 for reservations.
Okay.
There's a powwow this weekend.
At a casino.
At the Cherokee Casino in West Siloam Springs. It's sponsored by the Siloam Springs Historical Museum.
Mm-hmm.
It'll happen from 9 to 4 on Saturday, and they'll have dancers from as many as 15 tribes doing 8 different kinds of dancing.
It's a feast for ears and eyes.
Absolutely. This may be the interesting thing winner.
Okay.
The Pea Ridge Mule Jump.
24th annual.
Born out of the days, I didn't know this, when hunters rode mules while their coon dogs chased, you guessed it, raccoons. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to get off the mule and open the gate.
Right.
So they got off the mule and let the mule jump and slithered over. The mule jump competition started in 1985 in Pea Ridge, and there will be all sorts of competitions on Saturday starting at 9 a.m. at the Pea Ridge High School. Tickets are $2 to $5. The Little O' Opry, something unusual in West Fork.
Yeah.
Celebrating 23 years this weekend.
Really?
They'll have a 12-year-old steel guitar player.
Oh, I love the steel guitar.
Braden Roller, he's just started playing with the band. Jerry Roller on steel guitar and dobro, bass player Bill Goff and more. It starts at 7 o'clock Saturday, and admission is $7 to $9.
I'm not going to be able to do all of this.
No, no, you're not. And a few other things that aren't weird, but I just want you to know about them. Mm-hmm. Fayetteville High School is doing Our Town.
Right. This tonight's it, right? This
tonight's
is the final performance.
7 o'clock in the new Performing Arts Center. Tickets are $5 to $7.
Don't you think it's a perfect inauguration for the new Art Center of a high school to do Our Town?
Oh, I think so. Yeah. It'd be a great night to name it the Warren Rosenauer Performing Arts Center, if anybody's listening.
What? How many people does that seat? Any
oh,
idea?
It's almost the Walton Arts Center. It's like 1,000 people.
Okay.
800 to 1,000. And the Northwest Arkansas Community College Drama Department is wrapping up their Cajun version of ASU Like It.
Some food tonight, right?
Tomorrow night and tomorrow night, there will be food from their restaurant on campus called Nola's at 6 o'clock and then the show at 7 o'clock. Show tickets are $6 to $8. There's a little charge for the food. Red beans and rice and muffaladas, and should be great fun.
Okay. Plenty to do this weekend. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
On this week's Generic Blues Show, I have some new music from Craig Chiquizo, John Nemeth, and Dr. John. Also be playing some Brick Fields, Roy Rogers, Janova Magnus, and more. That's the Generic Blues Show every Friday night at 9 o'clock. We'll see you then.
This is Ozarks at Large. Tonight, the Arkansas Razorback volleyball team will try to improve on its so far impressive 14-3 record when they host Texas A&M in Barnhill Arena on the University of Arkansas campus. Sunday, Arkansas will host the preseason favorite to win the SEC, Tennessee, a team Arkansas defeated earlier this year in Knoxville. As head coach Robert Puliza points out, both of this weekend's opponents are receiving votes in the latest top 25 polls.
Yeah, big weekend. You know, when you're in SEC play, every match is a must win. As people say, people ask me, is this a must win? When SEC play, everything is a must win because every opponent is a good opponent and everything matters. We don't have, at the end of the year, we don't have a tournament to redeem yourself and try to win a championship. You're trying to win the championship throughout the season. So every match is a championship match. A&M is our first match, and it's on Friday at 7 o'clock.
And this is new for you.
It is. A&M. And actually, the interesting thing about this is the first time in both programs' history that we're playing each other. So that you rarely see that anymore in this day and age. You know, everybody has about play everybody at this level, especially so close and the old rivalries. So this is going to be an exciting new rivalry that is starting on Friday. So fans should come out and be part of something, a new rivalry. And it's primetime at the Palace for basketball that starts at 9 o'clock on Friday. So people can come, watch our match, be part of something really exciting, and then just walk down to Bud Walton and do that thing. So exciting day on Friday.
Mentioned that A&M is receiving votes in the polls. So is your Sunday opponent.
Yeah, Tennessee, very good. Very, very physical. We already played them once. We were able to escape with a win in Knoxville. But they're the SEC defending champions. They got picked unanimous to win the SEC this year. So obviously they're very good and a tough weekend.
Obviously, a lot of work to be done. But when you go back and you have that victory at Knoxville to put on your resume, that's got to help when the selection committee looks.
Yeah, you know, right now that win certainly is one of those that will help us you know, putting in the resume certainly helps. But we've put a pretty good body of work in our resume. It's certainly not finished. That's the thing. We've done our, you know, we beat Kansas, who's really high in the RPI. Beat Tulsa, who's always, you know, high in the RPI, is doing some really good stuff. Play Michigan and Oklahoma tough. But those are teams that will be NCAA tournament teams. So we have some good stuff in our resume. Now we just got to make sure that we finish it out in this latter half of the season.
You've already set records this year for attendance.
Yeah, I mean, I'm telling you, the Barney Hill Arena has become one of the best volleyball venues in the country. And if somebody has not come yet to Barney Hill to watch a match, especially with the group we have right now, we have a really exciting bunch. Great role models for young kids, for those people that have families or looking something to do over the weekend. They should come to Barney Hill. It's a great, great environment. The Hog Wild Band rocks that place night in and night out, and we're putting up a good show. So certainly come out and cheer us on. It's a lot of fun.
And the young kids get a chance to get up close and personal with the staff and the players.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one thing that we've tried to create an environment that is great for families and great, you know, especially so that the kids have access to our players. We're very proud of our players. We think we have good role models. And the kids, actually, before the match starts, they can get down on the court for rally lines. And when the lights go off, they get to be down there. They get to be shake hands and with the players and all that good stuff before the match starts. And our players stayed after the match and just hang out with the kids and really enjoy the family. So it's a great family environment.
So it is A&M at 7 Friday night, Tennessee and Barnhill again Sunday afternoon at 1. I've got one more question that I've been meaning to ask you for some time. When I started watching college volleyball, it was when you still had side out.
Right. Correct,
you could only score when serve. Mm-hmm. Now, no, I don't know if anyone in the world plays volleyball that way anymore.
Yeah, no, now it's everything is rally scoring.
Right.
Everything counts.
Do you like that more?
I actually do. When I played it, I played it side out only. So you really were able to score only on your serve. And I was biased back then. I thought that's the way it should be played. But once he went to rally, I really enjoy it now because everything counts. Everything you do, you got to do it with purpose because there is a consequence to it. Either get a point or lose a point. So I really enjoy it more. I think it's even better for the fans. And we go to 25 for a little bit. It was 30. Mm-hmm. Now we go the first four sets to 25. If we have to go to a decisive set, it goes to 15. But, yeah, I enjoy the rally. I think it makes it more intense and a lot more fun.
Well, you know, and it used to be when you had the side out, if you were at match point but you had earned the serve back, you could breathe easier for at least that serve.
Correct.
You had some time, a respite, but no more.
No more. Everything counts.
I like it.
You know, and I think it's making it a lot more exciting. And as an athlete, it just keeps you more engaged. And the more engaged you are, the better you are.
And it keeps the fans more
correct.
Engaged.
Correct. And I think it's made the sport better.
All right. Best of luck.
Well, thank you. Go Hogs.
Robert Poliza is the head coach of the Arkansas Razorback volleyball team. The Razorbacks host Texas A&M tonight at 7 at Barnhill Arena on the University of Arkansas campus. And Sunday afternoon, Arkansas will host Tennessee. That match begins at 1. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums with me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. Teresa Maurer. And tomorrow, Teresa, it becomes official at the Farmers Market, does it not?
That is exactly right. We are pleased to be able to say that tomorrow we're going to be receiving the actual award from the American Farmland Trust for the Fayetteville Farmers Market being the number one favorite market in the country. So we are just so excited. Gretchen Mays from the American Farmland Trust will be here in person to present the award.
I know that the honor itself is something. Do you get a trophy? Do you get a cup? Do you get a plaque?
We really don't know. They're going to surprise us. You know, Lori Boatwright, who's the co-manager with me and Joe Canfield at the market, has said they've kept it wrapped in mystery. So we're going to be as surprised as anybody else. But it will be, you know, I think a great day, not just an occasion for speeches, but a great day to also recognize the customers who really made the market possible. And we're hoping they'll all turn out and celebrate with us. And we have a couple of special things planned.
So this is going to be outside, open to the public?
Yes, it's outside, open to the public, open to the media. We hope people will come and, again, help us spread the really good word. It'll be at the Town Center Plaza, so right there by the big globe on the steps there. And then that way that'll give people room to spread out into the plaza that day. And also, you know, parking is always an issue down there. I just want to remind people that parking is available for free on Saturday at the garage that's right underneath the Town Center Square. And you can get to that from Mountain. You turn, on Block, then on Rock, and then on East. And you come in the garage entrance that way. There's lots of room there. You go up the stairs, and you're right there in the plaza.
This is exciting. Congratulations.
It is. We are, it's just, again, I think a real tribute. And to go from number 5 to number 1 in just 1 year is pretty exciting. And to do it in a drought year is even more exciting. And a tribute to our vendors who, again, the customers, the vendors, the city, all those things kind of come together to make our wonderful market possible. And then to get recognition from a great organization like American Farmland Trust that's working to preserve farmlands close to cities, that's an extra special honor.
It's mid-October. What if I go to the Fayetteville Farmers Market or any area markets this weekend? What will I find?
Gosh, there's still a great variety of vegetables. And, of course, you know, with Halloween coming up, of course, you've got all the pumpkins and, you know, squash and those kinds of things that people like to use for decorations. But really, you know, the lettuces have come back. A lot of the cool season things are back. There's still green beans at the market. I mean, really, I would say there's even been some late sweet corn, although the recent frost may have kind of knocked that down a little bit. But really, diversity is still very good. And, of course, we're building up to our craft weekend, which is next weekend, where we'll be shining the spotlight on some of our art and craft folks who will also be turned out this coming Saturday. So in addition to the food, farm vendors and the food court vendors will have our art and craft people well represented as well.
Can I give you a watermelon update?
Sure.
You know, I'm a big fan.
There's still watermelon on the market. Yeah.
Sunday, the Unitarian Universalists of Eureka Springs asked me to come speak to them. And afterwards, they had a sort of potluck. And there was an heirloom watermelon. It had been – I didn't see the melon itself. I saw the – what would you call it? The meat of the watermelon?
Yeah.
The fruit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In a bowl. And it looked like cantaloupe. It looked exactly like cantaloupe.
Yes, there's that peach-colored fleshed watermelon. And I bet it tasted incredible.
Oh, my goodness. It's the best watermelon I've ever had.
That's great.
And and it's called a golden watermelon. Mm-hmm. And I talked to the woman – she and her husband raised them and said, you know, each one's a little bit different, but that most of them taste a very sweet. You could tell it was watermelon. But
yes.
So these heirloom, whether it's a tomato or zucchini or whatever, keep them coming.
Yeah. And that's – I think that's what's really been great as our vendors have kind of diversified their offerings as a chance for you to have kind of a new taste sensation like that. So – I try to get people, try something that's maybe a little less familiar. You know, maybe if you'd seen that watermelon open on the table, you'd go, huh, that's kind of a shock, different color. Go ahead and try it. Great adventure.
You know, over time, I guess, you know, we've said, okay, a tomato has to taste like this. So if it tastes
Or look like this.
Yeah. And then you get into, because some of those heirloom tomatoes
They're
that are the markets
colors.
Around here every summer are fantastic.
Yes.
And different.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
There's a lot of variety out there that you're not going to see.
Yeah. And again, I just want to remind people, you know, as I did the last time we talked, the markets, most of the markets are open through October. I would say there are several of the larger markets that will go all the way up to Thanksgiving. And then, you know, at a later show, I could talk about some of the markets that keep going beyond, you know, even beyond Thanksgiving. But for sure, between now and Thanksgiving, you're going to have some great things at the market. And also wanted to mention back on the awards thing is that the Botanical Garden Market came in third in its category of small markets because it has fewer vendors, but again, great variety. I was out there last Sunday. We still have our meat vendors coming out there, and we've had fruit. We've got late apple varieties that are just wonderful right now. Talk about apple varieties. being a taste sensation too, like you were talking about tomatoes and melons. Try a different variety.
Just tried Arkansas Blacks for the first time.
Yes.
Really good.
And those
crisp
are really interesting because they'll keep for a long time. So you could buy some of those now. They're actually a really wonderful keeper apple, and you can keep some in your crisper, and they will stay flavorful for a much longer time than many other varieties, and the flavor will actually change a little bit through time.
Huh.
So that's definitely was an apple, you know, developed in Arkansas and kind of a keeper apple for those times when you didn't have other kinds of fruit.
Tomorrow morning at 9, it all begins on the Fayetteville Square.
Yes, and it's free, and we hope the public and the media will come out and celebrate with us.
Teresa Mowers, our local food ambassador. Teresa, thank you as always.
Thanks, Kyle.
La la la, la la la, Elmo song. Me write the music, me write the words. That's Elmo song. All right, fine. That works a lot better when Elmo does it himself. I'm Peter Sagal. On this week's show, we'll hear from Elmo and the man behind him, plus Carrie Fisher, Tom Hanks, and more. It's a celebrity-tastic. Wait, wait, don't tell me. Join us for the news quiz from NPR.
Wait, wait, don't tell me. Now in its new time, Saturday mornings at 9 on KUAF 91.3 FM. A rare opportunity to see one of the legends of Southern rock and roll happens this weekend. Tav Falco is coming from Europe back to the United States. Ozarks at Large's Katie Hendrickson has this preview.
Wow, wild women like to have a good time.
The opening moments of Wild, Wild Women from Tav Falco and the Panther Burns. The online music dictionary AllMusic.com calls Tav Falco the master of a raw and symbolic fusion of rockabilly, blues, and fractured noise, as well as one of the earliest purveyors of what would become known as psychobilly. Now, Falco is an Arkansas native. Born in the countryside near Wheeland Springs and Gurdon in the southwest part of the state, he'll bring his band Tav Falco and the unapproachable Panther Burns to Rogue on Dixon Street in Fayetteville tomorrow night. That's a very rare stateside appearance since he currently resides in Europe. The last time they played Fayetteville, the legendary Ice House was still open. It was the 1980s when Tav lived in New York City during the height of the fabled no wave scene in downtown Manhattan. But Tav spent 8 years in these hills when he studied at the University of Arkansas in the 60s and early 1970s. By 1973, he'd moved to Memphis, where he formed his influential band Tav Falco and the Panther Burns. That was not long after his solo set during a multimedia arts festival called the Tennessee Waltz. At that appearance, Tav sang a version of Lead Belly's Bourgeois Blues, just him and electric guitar, and a chainsaw happened to be up there too. By the end of his set, he was sawing the guitar in half while it was still plugged into the amp, which sent a shock through the audience. One of those listeners was the musician-producer Alex Chilton, best known as the lead vocalist of Texas psych rock country band Big Star. Chilton started coming by Falco's house, where they'd have jam sessions. And by 1979, that turned into Tav Falco and the Panther Burns. The first iteration of the band included Tav himself, Alex Chilton, and Memphis producer Jim Dickinson, who'd laid down tracks for people such as Screamin' Jay Hawkins, Big Star, and The Replacements, as well as was a session musician for folks including Aretha Franklin, The Rolling Stones, and Arlo Guthrie. Although Taft moved on to the trenches of the no-wave scene in Lower Manhattan by the 1980s, Memphis was where he had his formation and where so many things took place. He founded the nonprofit art action video group Televista with Arkansan Randall Lyon, which aimed to document the thriving arts and music community of Memphis in that era. He also became friends with the photographer William Eggleston, who's largely credited with bringing color photography into the importance of art photography. Now, Falco has been an expat for some time and currently resides in Vienna. He called me via Skype having just finished a new underground film. It was during the rumble of Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue. A generous and gracious interviewee, he recounted in detail the 8 influential years he spent in Fayetteville, as well as a detailed account of how Panther Burns was founded and where the name came from. It was from a plantation in Tennessee. Unfortunately, the audio recording was garbled and unclear, but here is part of our conversation in which he discusses his work as an artist in many mediums, including music, film, and as a writer. He wrote, along with journalist Eric Morse, a sprawling 2-volume memoir, Ode to Memphis, called Mondo Memphis. That's when he explained that as an artist, it was his duty to break down barriers.
It's like the sax player Charlie Parker once said, it is the job of the artist to break down the barriers, to break down barriers between the art. There's no separation between sound and picture, between being in front of the camera and behind it. Really, I have one song to sing, and it is a vision. It is the Orphic vision. It is the vision of Orpheus. It is the vision of going down. It is not a mystic vision of the heavens, of the stars, but it is a vision of the unconscious. It is a vision of going down into the underground like Orpheus, to go down with his lyre and to cast a spell with his music. And that is what we do with Panther Burns.
Tav Falco and his unapproachable Panther Burns perform at Rogue on Dixon Street in Fayetteville tomorrow night, along with local acts Glory Bones and Forever Blowing Bubbles. For more information, you can call Rogue at 571-5200 or go to dearcrossing.ticketbud.com/PantherBurnsRogue. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Katie Henriksen.
The 24th annual Chili Pepper Cross Country Race tomorrow at the University of Arkansas's Cross Country Course in Fayetteville. Over 80 college teams and 120 high school teams will be competing, plus 750 runners will participate in the open 10K and 1 mile fun run. Registration and more information available at chilipepperfestival.org. Don't forget, October is the month of KUAF's fall campaign. All contributions made during this month, including one you would make right now, count toward KUAF's fall campaign goal. You can show your support for KUAF and your public radio habit right now online at KUAF.com. Many, many other things happening this weekend. The 24th annual Pea Ridge Mule Jump takes place tomorrow morning at Pea Ridge High School. A 5K run will start the day's activities at 7:30. If you want to know more, PeaRidgeMuleJump.com. The Northwest Arkansas Riders we'll meet at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville tomorrow for a reading of original flash fiction that's 600 words or fewer in an explosion of prose. It's free. It's open to the public. It begins tomorrow night at 7 at Nightbird Books at 205 West Dixon Street. And history buff Ann Webb will share pieces from her collection of Civil War artifacts and Victorian-era mourning jewelry. That's mourning with a U, at the West Fork Public Library tomorrow afternoon at 1. The public's invited. It's absolutely free. If you'd like more information, you can call 839-2626. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Low Gap. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back Sunday morning at 9 with my co-producer Christina Thomas. We'll have Weekend Ozarks at Large, another brand new daily edition of Ozarks at Large, Monday at noon. This is Ozarks at Large and KUAF. Thanks so much for listening. Have a safe weekend.